This is episode number 10, Finding Your Noble Purpose with Lisa McLeod.
Welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Wes Barefoot, where it's my mission to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing business owners take control of their lives and create freedom for themselves through business ownership. Each episode, I'll be exploring the strategies and tactics of other successful entrepreneurs that have created freedom in their own lives while sharing what I'm learning along my own path to freedom. I'm glad you're here. Let's drop in.
My guest today is Lisa McLeod. Lisa is the founder and CEO of McLeod & More. Over her career, Lisa has conducted extensive research that revealed that organizations driven by noble purpose outperform their competition. Lisa is the author of multiple books, including Selling with a Noble Purpose, Leading with a Noble Purpose, Triangle of Truth, and several others. She's a highly sought-after keynote speaker and has delivered speeches and conducted programs in over 25 countries around the world. She's also consulted and provided keynotes for organizations of the likes of Google, LinkedIn, Cisco, and many, many more. In this episode, Lisa shares what she's learned through all of this experience and unpacks this concept of noble purpose and how identifying and leading with your noble purpose can result in accelerated revenue and increase competitive differentiation for companies large and small. I've had the privilege of hearing Lisa speak live at one of our franchise conferences, and I've thoroughly enjoyed my conversation with her today, and I know you will too. So with that, let's drop in with Lisa McLeod. Lisa, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to have the opportunity to talk with you. I appreciate you making time to join me.
Me too. It's good to have a one-on-one conversation, even if we're sharing it with lots of other people.
That's right. No, and I've had the pleasure of hearing you speak live at some of our Shelf Genie conferences. I've read several of your books, and you know, everything you talk about has had a huge impact on my wife and I, and you know, how we run our businesses. So I'm really excited for the audience to hear a little bit more from you. And I think we're going to have a great conversation that anyone listening in is going to get a ton of value from. So I want to, you know, give you the chance to give a little bit of your background to those listening in who may not be as familiar with you and your work. You know, tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got to where you are today. You know, a published author, you speak all over the world, you conduct programs with huge companies. How did you get started in this line of work? And you know, what have you kind of done to build it into, you know, this organization that you have today?
Well, it does sound kind of impressive when you say it like that. The journey, as anyone entrepreneur knows, was a little less linear. And it really all started with a central question. And the question that I wanted to answer was, why do some people in some organizations outperform other people in organizations when they seem like they're doing the same things?
Right.
And so that led me to, my background is as a sales development person. And so that led me to a couple of studies, and one in particular that I did several years ago with a big biotech company revealed that people who have this sense of noble purpose, who truly believe that what they're doing matters to others, actually outperform people who are just in it to try and do a good job.
Right.
So it's not really a battle between good and evil. It's a battle between our ego and am I in it for myself versus am I in it for others? And the interesting thing that played out and has been shown in our initial study and several other studies since have proven this is this even applies to sales, where we think that the best salespeople are the ones that want to make the biggest commissions.
Sure.
But that's backwards. The best salespeople do make the biggest commissions, but what was revealed in our study is the salespeople who have this, what we call noble purpose, this sense of wanting to improve life for customers, actually outsell salespeople who are focused on internal targets and quotas. And that's a real paradigm shift for a lot of people.
It is. It's counterintuitive, but I mean, I've seen it in action, you know, through our Shelf Genie business. And I mean, you've been very instrumental with Shelf Genie over the years and really helping us as an organization identify our noble purpose. And, you know, I think it's something
And I know I've heard you and Andy Pittman, our CEO, have this conversation. And I think Shelf Genie always kind of operated by this noble purpose, but we didn't necessarily have it identified, and we certainly didn't refer to it as a noble purpose. But, you know, for example, in my wife and I's franchise, you know, we've learned that, you know, we need to really almost strategically recruit people that are more likely to buy in to our noble purpose versus trying to train that. Cause we've learned the hard way. It's really not something that we can train. And then, you know, sure enough, you've got people that kind of see the greater good that they're working for, how they're really able to make a positive impact in their clients' lives, and they perform better. All the numbers, the commission, all of that follows. So you still get the results that you would expect, you know, the very hungry salesperson that's out there, you know, chasing the big commissions to get. But it is counterintuitive until you kind of see it firsthand, I guess.
It is. And what's interesting is, I want to be really clear when I talk about noble purpose. A lot of people think that, you know, noble purpose is reserved for people that are going to, you know, be teachers or nurses or on the front line of healthcare, be surgeons or something. And certainly those people have a noble purpose. But a lot of times people think, oh, well, I'm just in business. You know, I sell software. I work for Shelf Genie. Mm-hmm. And what I would tell you is, if customers are buying from you and you're not selling something that's harming them, you have a noble purpose, or you're helping them in some way, or they wouldn't be buying from you. And I think like Shelf Genie is a good example. I'll compare it to a bank that we're working with. And you can see these folks on our website. It's Atlantic Capital Bank. Mm-hmm. They're a mid-sized commercial bank in Atlanta. And I use these two because you think glide out shelving and finance, those two things are not the same.
Yeah,
they're
polar opposites.
Yeah. But what in both of those organizations, there was this implicit sense that we are doing good. Mm-hmm. And so what we did when we came in, when I came in as a consultant with my team, we made it explicit. So in Shelf Genie, you know, you've got people that have pain and frustration with their homes, and you create a joyful experience in their home.
Yeah.
With a bank, you have people that are all angsty about finances, and it's really easy to become just a transaction. And they said, instead, we fuel prosperity. Mm. And I'm using these as examples because I know that a lot of people pursue an entrepreneur path because they want more economic freedom and more lifestyle freedom. And those are great places to start, but you will not be ultimately successful unless you find something that one, makes a difference to customers, and two, makes a difference in an area that you care about.
Yes. Yeah. So I agree with that. And this is one of the questions I wanted to ask you, you know, while you're on today, because I work with a lot of people that are interested in getting into business for themselves through a franchise. And, you know, a lot of times people's first instinct when they're considering, you know, what type of business should I get into is to follow their passion, right? So for example, you know, if someone's passionate about golf, their first instinct may be, hey, I want to be in the golf business, right? But what I've seen firsthand is that so many times that's not the best way to choose the business that you're going to be in, right? Because what you don't probably take into account, like if you love playing golf, you're probably going to have less time to play golf if you own a golf shop, right? You're going to be doing inventory of golf balls. You're going to be doing accounts receivables. You're going to be doing payroll. You'll probably actually enjoy golf much less than you did prior to getting into that business. So, you know, one of the things I really encourage people to think through is, you know, it's not so much about the widget, right? The product or the service that the business provides, at least not as the starting point. You know, let's really get clear on, you know, number one, what are your motivations for wanting to get into business for yourself? What are your goals that owning a business will help you achieve? And then let's get clear on the characteristics of a business, you know, meaning, you know, what is your role as the owner going to be? Where are you going to be spending the majority of your time? Does it play to your skill set, or are they things that you'll actually enjoy doing? And then we can focus more on the product or the service. So that's counterintuitive for a lot of people. So what would your advice be, you know, looking at it that way when it comes to still trying to find a business that you're going to be passionate about and that you do feel is, you know, that there's kind of a deeper meaning behind? Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you two data points. One, first, an anecdotal example. You being passionate about golf would not be enough. Are you passionate about introducing other people to golf?
There you go.
Are you passionate about helping people play golf? That's the differentiator. And there's been some interesting studies about this intersection of passion and purpose. And one of them that I'll share with you is fascinating. It assessed people in organizations, and what they found with the people with passion for the task and I like it, I'm excited about it, and a sense of purpose, it's important, it helps others. The people with both, top performers. Everything from individual performers, small organizations, large organizations, top performers. The people with neither passion nor purpose, bottom performers. No surprise. But here is where it gets interesting. When they looked at people that had just one, either passion or purpose, purpose trumped passion. And here's the reason why. Passion tends to be individual. It waxes and wanes. It's about what excites you. It's about what delights you. Purpose is more steadfast. It is about what you believe the world needs from you and what is important to get done. So, for example, I am passionate about writing and I really like it. But there's lots of days when I don't feel like it.
Right.
Because it's hard.
Yeah.
And so on those days, if I don't feel like, you know, if I'm just journaling, nobody gives a flip what I write in my journal.
Sure.
But if I feel like I've got people waiting on me that need this, that's going to sustain me. And it's really important during a time of uncertainty or crisis, because a lot of businesses, you know, we've seen with the current COVID and you know, who knows where we'll end with that.
Yeah.
But if you were just passionate about what you're doing, and your team was passionate, that's not going to be enough. You have to feel like it really matters. And it can't just matter to you. It has to matter to someone else. And when you tap into that, you create something much more sustainable. It gives you something to tether yourself to
right.
during the days when your passion might wane.
Right. Yeah. Because passion's great on the days where you're feeling it, but there's going to be plenty of days where you're just not feeling it. And then, right. you know, it kind of disappears at least for a period of time. And, you know, you explaining it that way makes a lot of sense. And I like the fact that you bring up, you know, how this, you know, can be implicated by very uncertain times like we're going through right now. And I want to circle back to that, but you explaining it that way, it makes a lot of sense. Cause you know, for example, in my wife and I's Shelf Genie franchise, we were far from passionate about shelving before we got into the business,
right?
I mean, it was not like we grew up dreaming of being in the shelving or the organization business. The characteristics of the business made a lot of sense for us. You know, the business model itself, the role of the owner, et cetera. But now that we're in the business, it's the purpose, right? I mean, now I can say we're a little more passionate about shelving, but it's still not like what we talk about, you know, in our downtime usually. But it's the purpose. It's this noble purpose that kind of guides us. It's knowing that our clients are counting on us to provide this amazing service for them. And that's what motivates us day in and day out, even through the hard days.
Through hard days. So if people are listening to this, I'll give you a couple of examples in very disparate worlds. So we'll start with Shelf Genie. And you might not have been passionate about glide outs, but I was, because I experienced them as a client. And so the passion is not for the product. The passion and the purpose is the way a person experiences their home. And so one of the things, I'll give you three examples, and I encourage listeners, do this with your business. I'm going to tell you how we did it with three businesses. Then you do this with your business, or try and do it with a business you're imagining going into.
Great.
So Shelf Genie, you want every single person that works there to have an image of this family. For me, it's an image of a mother not pissed off while she's making dinner, but instead just pulling things out easily and creating a joyful experience. For our bank client, they want an experience of people being excited about their business and feeling like the financial piece is easy to manage and attainable. Yeah. Another client of ours is in the software industry. And for them, it's imagining people at their screens, just pulling up all the information they want, making fast decisions and doing it virtually. That's the mental image. And we call it customer impact. So it's not selling with noble purpose goes beyond pleasing customers. It's about improving customers. And so in your business, if you can have absolute clarity about how you improve life for customers and you make that the centerpiece of your business, That's the North Star. That is going to be more engaging to your team. It's going to create a more engaging sales narrative, and it's going to sustain you during tough times. Because that's what's interesting, is how you make a difference to others. Because humans are hardwired for that.
Yeah, no doubt. And what I always come back to is, if you lead with that, if you using your words, make that your North Star, all the other things you want in business, the revenue, the profits, all of that follows, right? I think it's if you get into business just for the economic gain, that's where, you know, your priorities are probably not right. And so that brings up another question that I wanted to ask you. I mean, again, a lot of the people that I'm working with, you know, they know they want to get into business for themselves, but they don't know exactly the best way to go about it, or what their next steps should be, or even, you know, what business makes the most sense for them. And that's where I'm really able to help people. But, you know, so what advice would you give to someone in that position, you know, the aspiring entrepreneur? I mean, do they need to like get crystal clear on what their noble purpose is prior to getting into business for themselves?
I wouldn't say they need to get crystal clear. They need to get in the right area. And by that, I mean, if you want to look at what's going to create future success, so I want to be super clear on this. Mm-hmm. Money and meaning are not two mutually exclusive things. The data tells us, I'm going to share 3 points with you. Individuals who have a sense of purpose bigger than themselves outperform individuals focused on their own gain. Salespeople with a sense of noble purpose outsell salespeople focused on targets. And organizations with a noble purpose bigger than money outperform the market by over 350%. There is hard data on this.
Wow.
And so as you think about yourself, so for example, I think about my own self and how I sort of landed where I was. And for me, it was a more gradual process because I didn't really have this knowledge. But the things you want to think about are, on my best day, what was I doing? What work was the most satisfying for me? And so I'll give you an example that might not seem connected, but one of the things that I am personally passionate about is helping people feel like their lives have great meaning and helping people wake up feeling fully alive. So I could have gone and been a personal coach. I could have had my own radio show. I could have worked with kids in schools. I could have done a number of things. But I had this sense of, when I feel fully alive myself is when I know that other people are waking up and going, let's jump on this day.
Yeah.
And so I think about when I feel fully alive, I also think about the things that break my heart. And the things that break my heart are the things of when people are just going through the motions of life and they're wasting their life. Yeah. And by wasting, I don't mean what they're doing is wasting. I mean, their mental frame is, you know, time to make the donuts. And we all have days like that. So for me, this intuitive sense of what I was interested in could have led me a variety of places. But like, for example, my husband is not interested in that at all. What he's interested in is he's interested in solving problems and figuring out the solution. Mm. But there's a place for both of us in this business. And so I would think for people choosing a business, one of the things we talk about in our work is you need to get your aim and your lane. Aim is about, how do I make a difference? Because the thing is, if one of the things that is really special for you and that you're really good at is empowering and leading others, I mean, there's a zillion businesses you could pick doing that.
Absolutely.
So as you think about it, to your point, people think, oh, I really like golf. Again, if you like golf, maybe you don't want to go in the golf business. If you love helping, introducing the world to golf and helping other people experience, then that might be for you.
Sure. Yeah.
And so it's both understanding what gets you excited and also looking back to times when you made a difference to others. What were you doing? That's the clue about where your business.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I would say it's fairly similar. I mean, I do a fairly in-depth consultation with everyone that I work with. And those are I ask a lot of questions along those lines to try to, you know, get people to really think about this. Because, you know, look, at the end of the day, if you're going to invest in starting your own business, you know, obviously you want to make sure that the economics are sound and that there's a high likelihood of success and all of right. these things. But, you know, at the end of the day, why ever get into business for yourself if it's not something that you're going to wake up and be excited about every day? I mean, it's not to say that every day is going to be good. I mean, that's part of being an entrepreneur or a right. business owner. You're going to have plenty of, you know, bad days. It's part of the territory.
Of being alive.
Yeah, no doubt. That's life in general, right? And we're kind of living that as we speak, you know, going through some interesting times, to say the least.
Wes here. You may have noticed there's a franchising theme to this podcast. And that's because franchising's had a massive impact on my life. And it's the very reason I'm walking my own path to freedom. In fact, one of my companies is a franchise consulting company where I work with people to help them understand franchising and determine if it might be a good fit for them. And if it is something they want to explore, then I help them navigate the entire investigative process and ultimately find a franchise business that's a great match for them. You know, the fact of the matter is there are thousands and thousands of franchise businesses out there today. And like anything, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Even out of the many, many great franchise companies, not every one of them would necessarily be a good fit for you. You know, buying a franchise is a huge decision. And you don't want to wing it. I've helped many people buy franchise businesses over the years, and my wife and I have bought and owned franchises today, and we plan to keep investing in franchise businesses. I love helping people understand this process and help them find a business that's going to be a great fit for them and help them accomplish their goals and ultimately create that freedom in their life that we're all looking for. The best part of all of this is that my services are free to the people I work with. And while I do love to contribute to charities and other great causes, I'm not a nonprofit. I'm compensated by the franchise companies I work with when I introduce them to someone that ends up becoming one of their franchisees. It's very similar to real estate, but with franchises. I have the privilege of working with hundreds and hundreds of the best franchise companies out there across practically every industry. So I can be absolutely confident that when I recommend someone to look at a franchise company, I'm introducing them to a very credible and proven company with a solid business model and great support. So if you think you might be interested in learning more about franchising and seeing if it might be right for you, I'd love to speak with you. Get in touch with me by email at wes@path2freedom.com, path2frdm.com. And also check out my website at path2freedom.com, spelled the same way, where I've got a ton of resources, both franchise and non-franchise related, that will help you start down your own path to freedom. And of course, subscribe to and follow the podcast for more great advice about business ownership. And if you know anyone else that might be interested in speaking with me, please share this podcast with them. Thanks for listening to my shameless plug. Now let's drop back into the episode.
So let's say that, you know, someone has kind of gotten clear on their noble purpose. They understand, you know, what they really want to accomplish through being in business for themselves. You know, most businesses, unless, you know, you're consulting or coaching or it's some sort of a sole proprietorship, most businesses are going to require that you have a team of some sorts. Yeah, it could be right. a very small team mm-hmm. or it could require a much larger team. So at that point, how does the business owner really go about establishing or building a culture that's centered around this noble purpose that they've identified?
Well, that's where it gets crucial. So there's a couple of things that you need to know. Is an organization where the leader says, our purpose is to hit our numbers. Mm-hmm. Our purpose is to be profitable. Even our purpose is to be number one in our market. That will be a better organization than an organization where they say, we have no purpose, just do whatever. Sure. I mean, you can create a good organization, but that organization will not be exceptional and will not be differentiated. Like an organization where the leader is absolutely crystal clear about telling people, our purpose is to create joy for other in people's homes, and we're going to measure it.
Yeah.
Our purpose is to fuel prosperity, and we're going to measure how prosperous our clients are. And the reason why is, human beings, once we get beyond food and shelter, have two fundamental needs. We want belonging and significance. We want to belong to something bigger than ourselves, and we want to feel that our part matters to someone. And so as a leader, when you tie into this, this sense of belonging and significance, that's how you create the exceptional team. Because a team that just says, we want to be the best, I mean, that's great. Again, it's better than a team that says average is good for us.
Yeah.
But they are still self-focused, and you don't ignite that inner fire, and you don't have something to tether yourself to in times of setbacks. Because a team that says we want to be the best, again, there's nothing wrong with going to be the best. I want my team to be the best.
Right.
But it is in the service of our bigger purpose. And so, like, for us and my team, our purpose is to help leaders drive revenue and do work that makes them proud. We want to help people make money and experience meaning, the money and the meaning together. And so if I say we want to be the best, every time we have a setback, we're going to have to, like, reset, you know, and we don't have, and just going into a client and saying, well, my team's goal is to be the best. Well, bully for you. If I come in and I say, my team's goal is to help you make more money and experience more joy and happiness at work, well, come on in.
Yeah.
You know? And so as a leader, and you can't just do it once. And one of the things that Shelf Genie is great at, and we taught a number of other clients this, is you have to tell stories that build belief in your team. Because your team needs belief in two things. They need belief that their work matters, and they need belief that they are a team that makes a difference. So they need belief in themselves and belief in something bigger than themselves. And you fuel that belief by storytelling.
By storytelling, and we've learned in our franchise that, especially with our designers who are the ones going out and, you know, consulting with our clients and you know, really understanding what their frustrations and pain points are, and then coming up with a unique solution to solve those pain points for them. We found that them having the solutions themselves in their own homes and using them every day, that really instills that belief system. And it gives them some of their own personal stories that they can relate to clients. And that's something that we've kind of learned, because we've had some designers along the way that they didn't believe in the value of what we were providing to our clients, and weren't
just
successful.
A transactional sale. And that solution that you sell is, because it is custom, is a little pricier than if you just Google it. And so you can't, anyone who's selling something that they don't want to be commoditized, you have to have a story with it. And I don't mean the story's fake. I mean, I had your stuff in my pantry and it's great.
Yeah.
So it's not a fake story, it's real. And so storytelling, if people take nothing else away from this call, the story you tell yourself about your work, your business, the impact you have, that internal story becomes the external story for your market. And so people think they need to talk about their quota every week. If you're doing that in the absence of story, you will create a transactional business.
Yep.
But if every time you say we sold 3 last week, you tell a story about the impact, you're building a belief. Because you think about, you know, I could give you a history quiz right now.
Please don't.
But you know what? You would probably get a lot of the dates and the numbers wrong, but you know the stories. You know the stories of the American Revolution. Granted, we kind of jiggered around with those stories a little bit, but you know the stories of the American Revolution. You know the stories of the Great Depression. You know the stories of Pearl Harbor and World War II. You know the stories of the Civil War. That's what we remember. I bet you could recite more of the stories about, you know, movies about various wars than you could the facts.
No doubt.
And this is just human nature.
Yep.
So we're hard-coded to remember emotions more than we do facts. And so that's why you as a business owner have to get a really compelling story about how your business makes a difference.
Yeah. Well, I want to come back to recruiting in just a minute, because I know this is a lot of the people I work with have so many questions when it comes to how to recruit and build a culture within a team. So I definitely want to come back to that. But I mean, everything you're talking about, I'm reading a book right now. I think it's called The Everything Store, but it's essentially a biography about Amazon and, you know, how Amazon's grown into the behemoth that it is today. And so, you know, obviously Jeff Bezos is a big part of the story. And, you know, he is adamant and has always been adamant about leading with his customers' best interest and, you know, making it a great experience for the clients. And as a result,
everything else sacrificed. I mean, Amazon lost a lot of money every year for a very long time. You know, it wasn't until that long ago that they were actually a very profitable company. But he had this more long-term vision of what, you know, Amazon's noble purpose was in his mind. And that's what he always led with, even when the shareholders and the board and everyone else was like, hey, man, we got to get in the black here. You know, he kept focused on his vision. And, you know, clearly that seems to have worked out for him today. But I'm sure there were a lot of times, you know, leading up to that where it maybe seemed like he wasn't going about it the right way, but he never really seemed to falter from you know, this vision and always keeping the client's best interest in mind.
Well, there's two interesting elements of this. So a lot of people, he was a publicly held company, and a lot of people, whether you have investors, whether it's just you and your spouse looking at the balance sheet, it's really tempting to give in to what I call the quarterly capitalism model, which is we got to get the earnings this quarter. And so Bezos did one thing really right, but then I want to tell you about a thing he kind of missed. The thing he did right was, this is an emblematic example. Their meetings, they always had an empty chair. And it's based on a spiritual tradition, but in his meetings, the empty chair represented the customer.
Yep.
So decisions were always made for how would they impact the customer.
Yep.
As it turns out, though, in our age of transparency, he probably should have had two empty chairs, and the second one should have been the employees, because because what's happening now is everything was for the customer, but now in a time of crisis and a time of transparency where you're only as good as a YouTube video one of your employees posted, a selfie video, is this sense of purpose from where I sit. It doesn't need to be diluted to, and the employees and the stakeholders and the shareholders. It is about the customer, but your values provide the guardrails for how you treat your employees. Because the number one thing you can do is to give your employees a sense of meaning and purpose about their work. But having said that, if you create conditions that are intolerable for them, it won't matter.
Well, and ultimately, it'll lead to a less enjoyable experience for the client.
Yeah, because all your employees will quit or whatever. And so,
yeah, or they're miserable. So they're not, you know, really giving their best effort. So, no, that's a fair point. And the book I'm reading, I'm not quite done with it, but I mean, it even talks about, you know, pretty harsh work conditions, you know, even years ago, even before we were, in this kind of age of transparency and crisis and stuff like that. So I think that's, you know, he's kind of known for riding his people pretty hard and being pretty demanding.
Well, the thing that's important here, though, is that when we were doing the work on developing the Noble Purpose methodology, I wanted to identify what enables people to get through difficult times. And so I interviewed a couple of people from the military, and my brother was in the military, my dad was, so was my grandfather. And there are two things that have enabled people to get through horrific times. And they are a belief in a cause bigger than themselves and commitment to the team, to their teammates. And so one of the things that is becoming apparent with Amazon now is that maybe the cause bigger than themselves was Jeff Bezos. And nobody is going to want to jump on board for the cause of making the boss richer. Yeah, it's not something it's really people.
Especially when we go through some really rough patches.
Rough times.
And
so that's the thing. And the reason I say this is a lot of times small organizations feel like they can't compete with big organizations for talent. And they feel like, well, they're going to go to work at some place that has cool offices and free lunch and all this. Right. And I will tell you, especially with younger people, people will choose meaning over money. If the money's okay, and you got to offer a somewhat competitive salary, people will choose meaning. I mean, I am evidence of that myself. I left Procter & Gamble after several years, which is a big company, which is a fine company. I learned a lot. And I remember sitting in the interview with this little $6 million company. So I'm like a manager with P&G, and I'm going to work with this little $6 million training company. And I remember my guy who was going to be my boss saying to me, I just went on the interview because I thought, well, this will be kind of interesting.
Right.
And the more I got into it, the more excited I got. And he said, well, I guess the question you need to ask yourself, Lisa, is do you think you can make a bigger difference in that big company? Or do you want to come over here and help us change the world?
Mm.
I was like, where do I sign?
Yeah, he had you there, huh?
Right. And again, the salary was competitive. So it wasn't like I'm going to forgo all my earthly possessions to change the world.
Sure.
And so I think for people listening to this, it's really important. We can get really deluded and think, oh, I got to do all this stuff for my employees. And, you know, no one will tell you more than I, you need to treat your employees well. I wish everyone had free lunch and on-site childcare and all the healthcare they need. Having said that, if you have a sense of purpose and you're doing something exciting, know that that is a huge advantage to you. And you need to put that front and center in your recruiting, in your conversations with people. And that can make up for some other things.
Well, it can. I think now more than ever, many people are realizing that it's not just about the compensation and the perks mm-hmm. and the benefits. It's about actually feeling fulfilled in what you do and enjoying how you spend your time. I mean, you know, most people spend a very significant portion of their lives working, whatever that work is. And I think people are starting to really, not that people haven't always thought this way, but I think I think more people are thinking about it through that lens versus, you know, where can I go to make the most money today? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, especially for some of the younger generations, they want to feel like whatever they're doing has meaning. Mm-hmm. And I think if they see growth potential, you know, they're willing to, you know, take a risk on maybe a smaller, less established company than going with a larger organization. So, you know, on that note, you know, how would a small business owner go about recruiting the right people that are going to be a good fit with their culture and their noble purpose? Should they kind of lead with their noble purpose in their recruiting efforts?
I will tell you exactly how you do it.
Okay.
You go look at three companies online. There are three clients of ours. You look at Atlantic Capital Bank. You look at Blackbaud, the software company out of Charleston, South Carolina. And you look at G Adventures, which is a travel company out of Toronto.
Okay.
And look at their messaging. I'm going to tell you what they did. But if you look at it, it's the exact template that we've taught clients. And they lead with, do you want to come help us change the world? Do you want to come help us change the world of finance? Do you want to make a difference? Because the second you hook somebody in emotionally, and I don't mean being manipulative.
Sure.
But the second you, Shelshini, do you want to create joy? Join us. Here's how you do it. And then they say, we're looking for a commercial banker. We're looking for a programmer. And this is how our work affects others. Because the thing is, if you're looking for a programmer, if you're looking for a designer, if you're looking for a salesperson, if you're looking for counter help, there's nothing you're going to say in the job description that's going to be more interesting than somebody else. So you've got to put it in the context of, this is the impact that we're having, and lead with that. And all three of those companies that I just mentioned have all been voted best place to work.
Wow.
And they've also all become the leaders in their space. And none of them were four or five years ago. So, it does make a big difference. And I think I want to circle back to this moment in time. One of the things that's really interesting that's happening now, if you've ever been through a personally challenging situation, for a lot of people like my age, losing a parent is a pretty standard, sad rite of passage. Mm-hmm. And it gives you pause, or if you've had a health scare, or if you've had a job loss, and you start to think, who am I and why am I here? And then what happens, though, is after the funeral, you go back to work and you're kind of back in the cadence of things and you hold on to a little bit of that, why am I here? But what's happening now is very different. It's happening to everyone at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's unique. That usually does not happen. Even in wartime, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But people are home now and they're thinking, who am I and why am I here? And so what you're going to see is, you're going to see this economic recovery where people are very worried about keeping and holding on to their jobs. But then once they get a little breathing room, they're going to remember which companies were transactional and which companies were really purpose-led. Yeah. And once they get a little breathing room, they're going to dump those transactional companies very quickly.
No doubt about it. I mean, I'm having a lot of conversations these days with people, you know, going through these exact type of circumstances. You know, some people have been furloughed, they've had their salaries reduced, people have lost their jobs, and not even that. I mean, even some people with, you know, pretty good jobs, they don't have any, you know, bad feelings towards their company. This time at home's kind of making them realize, you know, they're working remotely and they're like, there's a different way to do this. I don't have to make that. Yeah. I don't have to make that commute every day, or I don't have to spend 4 days of the week traveling, you know, every week like I do.
People are home and going, oh, turns out my kids were quite delightful creatures. Wow. Yeah. Did not know that.
Yeah. I mean, I was just talking to a guy the other day and he's got 3 young kids at home. He's in medical device. And he said, Monday through Thursday, every week, I'm on the road. And he said, this time at home, he's like, I mean, I always knew I was missing a lot of good time with my family, but he said, being here all the time, I realized just how much I'm missing. He's like, I dread having to go back to it. He said, I get miserable when I think about having to go back to that.
And so I think two things. If people are thinking that for themselves and they want to be entrepreneurs, now is the time. But the other thing that they've got to realize is, remember how you felt when your company told you that you were just a number? Mm-hmm. You don't want to end up with a bunch of employees that feel that way.
Yeah. And I can tell you, I mean, you know, my wife and I have learned in particularly our Shelf Genie business that we would much rather hire based on attitude and belief system. Is this person going to be a good fit with our culture? Are they going to buy into our noble purpose? We can teach them everything else they need to know. We can't teach them their attitude, though, and their belief system.
I'll tell you what the research tells us, that there are kind of 3 groups of people. And one group of people has this innate sense of purpose. And no matter what's going on around them, they will find it. And they are the top performers. There's another group of people on the other side of the bell curve, and they struggle for a variety of reasons. They don't have a sense of purpose. They tend to be lower performers. You don't want them. But what the research tells us is the middle of the bell curve is actually quite malleable. Mm. And those are the people who respond to the words of the leader. Those are the people who don't innately see where's the purpose and meaning in this. But those are the people that when the leader shows it to them, they lean into it, they grab it, and they become top performers. And so as you're looking for people, when you start talking about it in the interviews, my guess is you get some of those high performers, but I bet you you're also getting some of those middle performers that go, oh, yeah, that, what he said, that purpose, I want that.
Yeah.
And they lean into it. And so that's an important thing to remember as a leader. Is the data tells us that the majority of the people are in the middle and that the words of the leader put them one way or one direction or the other.
Well, that's a really good point. And I'm glad you brought that, because that's actually a question that I planned to ask you was, you know, can someone find a noble purpose in pretty much any job or any business? Or is it really the type of thing where if they're not in the right job or the right company, they're probably not going to find this noble purpose. And it sounds like it has a lot to do with the leadership, the business owner, and that culture that they've created and how they're communicating to their team.
That's right.
What that purpose is and why.
I'll also tell you that there is a responsibility on the performer, particularly customer-facing performers, because as a business leader, it's really easy to get mired in your metrics. I had a CEO tell me once, I realize now, I need to manage to the numbers, but lead to the purpose. Mm. But it's really easy to get mired in the metrics. And so if you are a frontline employee, when you bring back stories of how you make a difference to customers and you tell those anecdotal stories, you're managing up and you're setting the tone for the organization. Because you can watch if your leader goes, I don't care about that bullshit, then you might be in the wrong organization. But if the leader goes, thank you for sharing that story. That just made my day. Then you're at the right place.
And right. So yeah.
All the ownership is not on the leaders. The ownership is on each one of us. And, you know, a lot of times people think, oh, my work doesn't matter. And you might be right. It might not matter. But I will tell you that we have studies from companies all over the world, from people who are serving fried chicken at Popeyes, to people who are putting in glide out shelving, to people who are sitting in a room coding, and they have found the meaning in what they do because they've connected the dots to the impact it has on others. So even if at this moment you might think that your job isn't as meaningful as you'd like it to be, what I can tell you is if you can connect the dots to the impact you have on others, you will like it more, you will have a better day, you will also perform at a higher level. And those two things, you might at the end of the day decide that you want to do something else on a bigger scale. But if you do that now, it'll set you up better for success. You'll have more options.
No, I think that's great. And just a real quick example to illustrate what you're saying. I mean, with Shelf Genie at the plant that manufactures all of our solutions, you know, Andy, the CEO, went in, we were having, you know, some production issues, lead times and claims were, you know, higher than what we would have liked to see. Well, Andy went in and showed them, you know, a finished solution and asked the plant workers, do you guys have any idea how much our clients would pay for this? And their answers were a good 60 to 70% less than what we would sell it for. Mm-hmm. And so he, you know, kind of educated them on, you know, this is how much our clients are willing to pay for this. And also here's why, you know, shared some client testimonials, and they got to hear firsthand from the end users how much these solutions improved their lives, how much joy they got out of them. And sure enough, it didn't take very long to where morale in the plant and production on all fronts improved dramatically. And I think it was really just getting that buy-in from them.
Well, if you think about it, I know we're running out of time, so I'll wrap with this. Think about it from the customer's perspective. Would you rather do business with a company that cares deeply about the impact they have on you, and that each person who touches your product, your food, your software knows this is about making a difference to customers? Or would you rather do business with a company where each person just passes it down the line? The answer is obvious. And the reason that companies with a purpose bigger than money outperform the market is because everything they touch becomes better because it's on behalf of the customer.
I love that. I mean, it's powerful stuff. And I thank you for coming on and sharing all of this. There's no doubt that everyone listening in is going to get tremendous value from this. And, you know, I just wanted to thank you personally for, you know, all the time you've spent with the Shelf Genie organization. I know everyone there has benefited greatly from you, you know, my wife and I included. So you've had a huge impact on us. Thank you very much for everything that you do. You know, where can people learn more about your work? I mean, you've got numerous books. Where can people find your books and just learn more about you and keep up with everything that you have going on?
There's two things you can do. Google Noble Purpose, and there I'll be. And you can sign up. We send out a weekly missive that's good for your team. And the other thing you can do is follow me on LinkedIn. Okay. We're starting to do videos, and they're appropriate to share with your team. They're absolutely free.
Great.
We do a Friday LinkedIn Live, and it's all free.
Very cool. Very cool. We'll post all that in the show notes as well. So, Lisa, thank you again so much. Really appreciate you dropping into the Path to Freedom podcast with me today. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day and week.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks for dropping in with me on this episode of the Path to Freedom podcast. I hope you got a ton of value and learned something new. And if you did, please make sure to subscribe and follow the Path to Freedom podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, please share with someone else that may also get value from it. And if you're interested in learning more about how you can take steps to getting into business for yourself, I'd love to speak with you. Connect with me online at pathtofreedom.com. That's path, the number two, FRDM.com, or shoot me an email at wes@pathtofreedom.com, spelled the same way. And if you know anyone else that may be interested in speaking with me, I'd love to meet them. Please forward this podcast along to them and encourage them to reach out. Thanks again for joining me today, and I'll see you next time. Now go drop in.